Well, last week we started a new sermon series. We've been working on the wisdom of Proverbs. And so if you were here, you might remember me saying that when we talk about wisdom, we're just talking about the stuff we learn that makes our lives work well, right? I think it was like how to avoid unnecessary drama, how to build lives that are more likely to make us happy. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start by talking a little bit more big picture this morning about how like wisdom is conceptualized in a spiritual framework, and then we'll work our way down to some more practical nuts and bolts, and we'll use some specific proverbs to close out. But I think this big picture will be helpful for us to understand the Christian imagination for wisdom, because while it is the stuff that makes our lives work well, wisdom is also thought of as a creative power. And wisdom is thought of as the very fabric that holds the universe together, right? It's something that is around us, it's something that's accessible to us, and it's part of the very being of God, right? So it's imagined as this much larger, dynamic, evolving force that holds all of creation together. So the Gospel of John opens with this, right? It says, "In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all humankind." Right? So John then goes on and says that this word, the Greek word logos, the logos, the word, is Jesus. Stay with me here. I'll get there. So Jesus is the word. In him all things were made. All right? So Colossians echoes this. This is the Apostle Paul. "The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. In him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He's before all things, and in him all things hold together." Right? So we get this kind of mystical picture from the New Testament that there's a part of God that creates and a part of God that like forms the glue for everything that's visible and invisible. Right? And so those of us who are Christian, we believe that that part of God briefly became a human in the form of Jesus, right? That part of God that became Jesus goes by other names, the Logos, the Word, the Wisdom of God, right? So these are all the same thing is what I'm trying to get us to see, right? This part of God at the beginning, through whom everything is made, through everything holds together in them, is still creating. Sometimes in the Bible shows up in literary form in a character called Wisdom. And as Christians, we believe also became a human briefly called Jesus, that Jesus is this same logos aspect of God. Does that make sense? Okay, so in the book of Proverbs, then wisdom is personified as this literary character. She's called Lady Wisdom, sometimes called Woman Wisdom. And so this is from Proverbs 8. "The Lord brought me forth as the first of their works, before their deeds of old. I was formed long ages ago at the beginning when the world came to be. When there were no watery depths, I was given birth. When there were no springs overflowing with water. Before the mountains were settled in place, before the hills, I was given birth. Before they made the world or its fields or any of the dust of the earth, I was there when they set the heavens in place. When they marked out the horizon on the face of the deep. When they established the clouds above and fixed securely the foundations of the deep. When they gave the sea its boundary so the waters would not overstep their command. Or when they marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was constantly at God's side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in their presence, rejoicing in their world, and delighting in humankind." Right? So we can see here Lady Wisdom seems to have this same role that we see echoed in John and Colossians, right? The same role as the Logos or the Word. Right? There's actually a verse in Luke where Jesus refers to himself as Sophia, which is the Greek word for wisdom. We won't read that this morning, but just know that in Christianity, Jesus is the incarnation of Lady Wisdom. So this is one of the icons. I actually preached on it last year, so I won't go too in depth, but if you look at this larger icon here, this is, you can look at it maybe when you come up for communion if you can't see it very well, but it's actually called Christ of the Holy Silence, but it's Christ as Sophia in feminine form. And so that's an icon that's from the Eastern Orthodox tradition. It comes from a 14th century monastery in Egypt. I think the particular version that we have is actually from the 18th century Russian Orthodox Church, right? But this is a long-standing strand in Christianity, right? So all this to say, Proverbs 8 is giving us a depiction of a God who's a little bit like an architect, right? An architect who, like, created a wisdom blueprint in order to design all of the created order, right? From the waters to the mountains to the hills to the heavens. Wisdom is thought to be the pattern that kind of runs through everything by which everything came to be, right? And so if wisdom is the blueprint, our tradition would suggest that then maybe there's a moral element to the universe, right? There's a really famous quote from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You've probably heard it, where he says, "The arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice." Right? You've probably heard that. It comes out of this worldview of Proverbs in the Hebrew Bible. Now, I've heard plenty of critiques of that quote. I feel like every time I hear it, people put caveats around it. They want to make sure that it doesn't get taken to mean something that it doesn't mean. People are worried that people will hear that and say, well, if the arc of the universe bends toward justice, well, then maybe we don't really have to do much, right? If it's already inevitable going, if it's already inevitably going that way, then we can just sort of let other people take care of it. Some people are concerned that people might take it to mean that once we've achieved some sort of liberation or a greater equality in one area, that maybe that can't ever really be taken away, because if the universe just kind of keeps moving toward justice, it's not moving away from it, right? So, but we know that's just not true, right? That's not true. Greater equality can be taken away. It's something that we have to partner with the Spirit of God to continue moving. So I don't think that's what Dr. King meant. I think he clearly felt that humans needed to help do the bending. But his worldview is coming out of this place of imagining the universe with all of its infinite possibilities, right? With all of the choices that we can make, both good and bad. It imagines that when we make choices that are for the betterment of others, that are going toward justice, that are better for ourselves even, or better for the creation, that it's like there's some extra oomph in those choices, right? Because the universe is inclined to work toward what is wise. Now, there's so many metaphors, I think, that we could use here. One that came to my mind was, I used to be a really avid off-road biker before I met Rachel. And I was going to give her a little teasing, but she, not teasing, but I was going to... She took her mom to the airport this morning, so I don't have her here. but I stopped biking essentially when I got married, and it's all good. It's better. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. This is like my nightmare. I'm just digging. I love my wife so much. Our 10th anniversary is coming up. Anyway, yeah, I know. Oh man, okay. She can't listen to this. So I used to sometimes train on the country roads just because that's sometimes a little more accessible or easy, right? And so I would go out, and of course, like, it's way easier, especially if you're on, if the fields are open, if the wind is at your back, right? And so I used to try and make sure that I would, if when I could, bike out against the wind so that that way it's smooth sailing back. Because you certainly don't want to, like, go way out feeling like, oh, this is great. Steve knows what I'm talking about, I think. And then on the way back, be working, like, so hard that you can hardly get home. Right? You want the wind at your back. In college, I rode, and so in that, actually, one, or you want to make sure the wind's at your front, not your back. But same thing, right? It just makes it easier. So Proverbs, I think, would say, making wise choices is like that, right? That when we make choices that have integrity, there's like extra wind that's sort of helping us out and making the way a little smoother. That the universe is primed to give us a little bonus help in whatever we're doing, because when we're making wise decisions, we're actually tapping into something outside ourselves that is an actual attribute of God. Because wisdom is a principle that's woven into how the world works, and so goodness becomes its own reward and starts to manifest in dividends. And then on the other hand, when we make foolish choices or say foolish things, it's a little bit just like biking against the wind or rowing against the wind. It actually works a little against our interest. It makes things just a little bit harder. Now, it's not saying that if we're foolish, we're going to be like punished for doing bad things. That's not what I'm saying. But I think Proverbs would say it's just like describing consequences, right? Because sometimes bad things just happen because life is hard and people get to make choices that affect us. But sometimes we do make things harder for ourselves, or maybe that's just me. And so I think it's just sort of describing what happens if you say, you know, you're escalating a fight with your next door neighbor, right? That's, it's like biking against the wind. Did any of you guys see that Irish movie? It came out a couple years ago, but Banshees of Inisherin? Yeah, a few of you. Oh man, it was so good. It was a big metaphor for the Irish Civil War, but it was, they boiled it down to like this fight between two former friends, and they just kept escalating it until, of course, it ends in tragedy. And you know, it's like, that's just what happens when you add fuel to the fire. And so I think there's a little bit of a similarity to the idea of karma in this, right? It's a little bit of like, sometimes you reap what you sow. Now, you can decide what you think about the universe being moral. I'm not trying to prove that. I just want to help us understand the imagination of the scripture when it's talking here about wisdom and folly, right? That it's talking about those things in this broader context of like how the world works. And I think it invites us to consider if this idea of a moral universe is maybe a helpful image for us or not. Now, you could say, oh, maybe that's just magical thinking. Well, maybe it's also just a really hopeful way of framing life. I know I personally find it hopeful to just think that maybe there's an amplification of wisdom when I'm heading in the right direction. Like sometimes it seems that way. So it's just something to think about. So to get to some of the nuts and bolts of Proverbs here, there are all of these one-liners that start in about chapter 10 through the end of the book. And they're often framed in contrast. Right? It's a little bit like the wise person does this, the foolish person does this, or be like this, don't be like that. So let's read an example here. Proverbs 11:12. It's stupid to say bad things about your neighbors. If you're sensible, you will keep quiet. I hear my grandma Gwen in her 90s saying this. She wouldn't be that blunt probably when she was younger. It's stupid to say bad things about your neighbors, but if you're sensible, you will keep quiet. It's just timeless advice, right? It's never sensible to gossip. I don't think Proverbs like this are necessarily like trying to be prescriptive. Meaning, I don't think they're trying to like create a set of rules that if we follow those rules, then things will go well, right? They're not really formatted to say things like, never say bad things about your neighbors. It's just more like pointing out patterns, right? It doesn't tend to go well when, dot, dot, dot. And then there's a whole lot of Proverbs about the power of words. And a lot of Proverbs about reckless speech, about loving speech, about dishonest speech, and so on. So I think Proverbs wants us to understand that our words carry weight, and those words can build up or they can tear down. Right? They can build up or they can tear down. And that's a little bit more literal when you think about it in the context of wisdom like being the blueprint for creation. Right? Because in the world of Proverbs, words are actually helping us participate in the ongoing co-creating of the universe when we're using wisdom. Or they can tear down what wisdom is trying to build. Does that make sense? So let's look at a few of the verses about words. I'm just going to read out some of these. Proverbs 11:9. Dishonest people use gossip to destroy their neighbors. Good people are protected by their own good sense. A kind answer soothes angry feelings, but harsh words stir them up. That's just about de-escalating conflict. Kind words are good medicine. Deceitful words can really hurt. Kind words are like honey. They cheer you up. They make you feel strong. Telling lies about friends is like attacking them with clubs and swords and sharp arrows. This is a little bit opposite to the American proverb we have, right? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. I think this one's maybe a little more truthful. Words can sometimes be just as harsh as physical pain. Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Right, so we can see this is kind of toying with that idea of like building and destroying, right? The tongue has the power of life, of helping to build and create. It has the power of death, of destroying. Where there's no fuel, a fire goes out. Where there's no gossip, arguments come to an end. Right, so there's many more like this, but all of them are just trying to kind of tell us how it is. I think they're descriptive of what humans have noticed, right? That people who speak kindly and honestly are like this. They're like honey. They're like good medicine. They bring less drama on themselves by their good sense. People who speak badly of others and who are dishonest, well, they stir up drama. We've all got somebody in our family, right? drama that inevitably comes back to bite them. Just me? Okay, it's all good. These sayings aren't telling us like how to speak, right? So they're not rules, but kind of embedded in them, we get this idea that we probably should speak kindly and that will help things go better, and that lying and gossiping and deceiving people and excessive arguing even will just make life less enjoyable. Sometimes the different proverbs will directly contradict each other, right? So these two are back to back, one verse right after the other. Don't answer fools according to their folly, or you'll become like them yourself. Answer fools according to their folly, or they will deem themselves wise. What the heck? What do we do? Answer the fool, not answer the fool, pity the fool. Thank you. Some of you who are Gen X and older got that, yeah. It's just recognizing that life is complicated, right? Sometimes people say messed up things, and it's better not to engage. It takes two people to argue. So when somebody else invites you into their high drama, you don't have to show up. Sometimes it's better not to engage, right? Especially if that person isn't engaging fairly. Like, we know fighting itself isn't bad, but if somebody doesn't fight fairly, that can really damage the relationship, right? So maybe this fool is making false accusations. Maybe they're making straw man arguments. Maybe they're taking personal stabs at your character. Maybe they're making bad motive, like assumptions about bad motives, but you feel like your motives actually are pure, right? So don't answer those fools according to their folly. They can't hear you, then you just look like a fool. But sometimes you gotta say something, right? Maybe that person is open to hearing your perspective. Maybe there's somebody else around who needs to hear what it is that you say. Like, maybe you've got kids and you've got a teachable moment. You wanna make sure that they're hearing you state that this isn't okay. I remember, this is out of my notes, but I remember like when I was coming out at our last church, I knew that there were people who couldn't hear it, but I wasn't doing it for them. I was doing it for like the other gay people and the people who could hear it. I remember being like, I'm gonna get up there, especially for the gay people and the women in the congregation, right? So I wasn't trying to engage, you know, sometimes you gotta answer fools according to their folly, or they will deem themselves wise, right? And so sometimes you gotta say that. If you don't ever refute what they're saying, sometimes people will just assume that they're right. They live in a bubble and they never get the different perspective. So how do you know which proverb applies to you in a given moment? Well, it depends, right? And I think the idea here is that there is no one Bible verse that can tell you. And I think wisdom is saying you got to figure it out. You got to trust your intuition. Or don't. You can go and ask somebody else that you trust for a second opinion. Right? Wisdom is about finding the best way forward, not about like one size fits all truisms. And then maybe you make a decision that you come to regret, but then you learn from that information. Right? There's nothing wrong with making a mistake, but we want to avoid making the same mistake twice. Right? We know there's an American proverb for that one, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right? I think Proverbs has something similar to make us think about learning from our mistakes. This is one of the most famous Proverbs, so some of you might know it. Proverbs 26:11. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Right? It's gross, it's really specific, and it's true, right? That makes it memorable. I grew up with dogs, I know what they do. I got a cat now, and I have to say the same applies to cats. They also return to their vomit. It's disgusting. But it's true about people. Right? We all have our ridiculously stupid things that we do, and we know that they mess up our lives. We know that they might mess up someone else's life or, you know, create a little discomfort or problems for people. And we kind of know it's foolish, but we just keep on doing it. You know, maybe it's like provoking a particular family member about politics, and you know it's not going to go well, but you just keep doing it. Maybe it's going back to a bad relationship, whatever it is, right? So the Proverbs, as you read through them, the ones about fools are not just for other people, right? These are Proverbs to get us curious about the foolish parts of ourselves. You know, I sometimes just want to read myself into the wise person in the Proverbs, but, you know, it probably is less helpful. This is where Rachel could have been like, no, Emily. So like this one might invite me to ask, where do I keep repeating the same not common sense moves in my life? Where am I stuck in the same negative grooves that aren't doing me or anybody else any good? Right? So a lot of following a wisdom path just boils down to learning from our own mistakes, learning from the mistakes of others. So I'd invite you, if you're reading along in Proverbs, maybe just see if there's a particular one that stands out to you that is speaking to you about maybe where you could make your life a little bit easier. And maybe especially in regards to speech, since we looked at that this week. Just maybe choose a specific proverb and see if there's something that is calling to you. All right, with that, I invite you, we're going to do a little guided meditation here. Sometimes we do silence. But I think this morning, I'd like to invite you, if you would like to use Proverbs 18 as just like a little breath meditation. So the proverb we read earlier is, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And what I was thinking we could do is like take some slow breaths, and on the in-breath, just think, the tongue has the power, and on the out-breath, of life and death. The tongue has the power of life and death. And then we'll just do that for like a minute and just kind of see where your mind takes you from there, and then I'll let us know when that's up. So the tongue has the power of life and death. Spirit, help us to use our words to bring life and to build up, to encourage, to create, to speak life into others. Help us, give us an imagination for when we're doing that, how we're just joining in with the fabric of the universe to co-create with you to bring about your good realm on this earth. I ask that you would help us to grow in wisdom, that you would help us to just kind of better see all of those parts of our hearts that sometimes we don't slow down to take a little moment to reflect on. Help us to grow in wisdom as we go through this series, and help us to be reflective as we go through our week, as we consider the words that we use with others in our workplaces, at home, and even with our own self-talk. In your name we pray, amen.